protection principles. All right, so keep those in mind, the environment, right? And how many genes we have controlling each trait, and the fact that even if I know all the genes, let's say if I have a sire that maybe I genotype and I know exactly all the genes it has, I still don't know, you know, which half is going to go to a progeny. So it's always going to be a little bit of randomness in that inheritance process. Okay, selection. So selection, it's a very easy principle to understand, right? What you want to change your population, you want to improve your population that you have. And the way we think about doing that is by selecting the best parents we have. So if I'm able to look at my population and find the best bull and the best female, okay, better than everything else I have, I know that if I use those two as parents, I should get an offspring which is better on average than what I have. Okay, so that's really a very simple principle. The problem is, how do I do that? How do I identify which is the best bull and which is the best heifer? And again, it's not easy because it goes back to, yes, I can look at them and I can measure the weaning weight and the yearling weight, but remember, when I look at that record, you know, maybe 60% of that is environment. Maybe that cow just ate a lot, it was really healthy all the time, maybe it had a higher weaning weight because of the environment, okay? It doesn't mean it has the best genes. And then you could have at the other end, you have an individual with a very low weaning weight, but with very good genes, because maybe it was sick, and maybe it didn't have the same level of nutrition and things like that. So always the challenge is, how do I go from what I can see, which is the winning way, to just the genetic merit of those individuals? And over time we got good at that, okay? How do we calculate the genetic merit of individuals? And we do a pretty good job. So I'm going to go through some of those things now. So how do we estimate the genetic merit in a population? So you all know about EVDs. In terms of us, when we actually calculate those things, we always, so the geneticists will talk about EBVs, which is the estimated breeding value or the genetic merit. And then the EBDs is really what you guys use. But the EBD was the relationship between the EBV and the EPD. So the EBV is the genetic merit, the estimated breeding value of an individual, and the EPD, what is the EPD first? What does it stand for?
Expected progeny difference.
Expected progeny difference. So what's the relationship between the two? It's a very easy one. How much did we say, how much of the DNA gets down to an offspring from a parent? Half. That's exactly the relationship. So the genetic merit is the genetic merit of an individual, but only half, which is the EBD, so you take half of the EBD, will get you to the EBD. Okay? Because only half will be passed down to an offspring. So we calculate the EBVs, the genetic merit, and then we publish the EPDs so we can make those comparisons. Okay? And so based on that, we always try to select superior animals as parents based on those EPDs. Okay, how do we do it? Well, we usually do it from phenotypes. So we actually use phenotypes. We need pedigree records, okay? But if you have those two, and if we also know the heritability of the trait, which is easy to calculate if you have the records in a population, then we have formulas where we can estimate genetic merit, which is, in a way, you are accounting for that environment. You are saying, I know 60% is environment, so I'm going to try to take that out to be left only the value of the genes. Okay, so we go through the math of that and we estimate the breeding values. And it has been successful, so I always like to show this picture because it shows, it's not in beef, but it really shows you the progress we can make with just selection based on phenotypes. So what they did a while ago in 2005, so they have these strains of chickens that they keep. So they have a strain from 1957, a strain from 1978, and then they had the 2005 strain. So they took animals from those strains, but then they fed them in the same time. So they fed them identical diets, they kept them in the similar conditions, so no environmental differences there. There were just different lights from different times. And 56 days, if you look at their weight, well, you can see, and you can see that from the picture very easily, but almost a four times difference between in the weight of those individuals, okay? All of that was done based on phenotype. All of it is done on measuring the weight, using the pedigree records, estimating breeding values, and selecting the best to mate with the best. So there's no question it works, okay? The only maybe problem with that, it's not going to be fast. You're not going to be able to do it in 1 or 2 or 3 years. So it takes time, but it's definitely working, okay? And I wanted to show you a picture in beef as well. So this shows you what we had in 1977. So if we take 7 cows today, we can actually get the same amount of beef from them as we got from 10 cows in 1977, okay? And then milk production is the same. We improved those traits 4 times. 1 cow yield 4 times the milk of a cow in 1940s. Well, that's quite a tremendous progress, okay, if you think about it. Now, this one is not taking in the account the environment, which in this case it's quite big, right? We do have maybe better nutrition today and better management, so this is not taking that into account, but quite a bit of this progress is from genetics as well. So there's no question genetics works. But then we have traits which are maybe more difficult to improve than others, okay? So milk yield is actually an example of that, but we have other traits which are the same, which are measured in only one sex. Okay, so if you think of milk yield, you measure that on the female, but you all know that which one has the most impact in your population, the male or the female, in terms of genetic improvement?
The male.
The male, right? Because you can generate a lot more progeny from one male, so you can make more progress if you use a good sire than not. But I cannot measure the milk yield on that bull. So how am I going to estimate, how am I going to know how good that bull is for milk yield if I cannot measure the milk yield? Well, the only way I can do it is by looking at the progeny. I need to generate a number of female progeny from this bull, look at how much milk they give, and then I can go back and say, okay, I looked at the progeny, I can tell how good or how bad this particular sire is for milk. But that's going to be slow. That means I need to wait that much longer to get the phenotype on those sires. Traits measure late in life. So if I'm interested, let's say, in meat quality, which I am, well, for me to be able to measure meat quality, I actually need to wait until that animal is slaughtered most of the time. I can maybe take some ultrasound earlier, but meat quality, right, if I look at tenderness, I look at marbling, I need to wait until the end of the life of that individual. Some traits are really just too expensive or difficult to measure. A lot of the traits that maybe we would be interested in the future, like feed efficiency. Everybody here should be interested in feed efficiency, right? No matter what sector you are in, feed efficiency is going to have an impact on your operation. It's really, it's both. It's difficult and it's also expensive. I mean, if you pay a lot, then it's not that difficult, but it's not an easy one and it's not a cheap one to measure. So most of the time you are not going to have the records. And remember, if I want to estimate genetic merit, I need the records. Without the records, until we get really good at genomics, we can't really do it without those measures. Okay? Okay, so how do we put it all together? So if I want, let's say, I want to know how fast can I change a population. We talk about that in terms of the rate of the genetic change. How fast can I change a population genetically? It will depend on four factors. The first one is selection intensive. It's a pretty easy one to get for everybody. It's really, you know, how many do you keep as parents? You usually keep very few if you think of your males. So pick whatever trait you are interested in. That's usually your population, normally distributed. You have an average, let's say, winning weight. You look at your males, you're going to select the top 10, okay? So you select the best. Now, can you tell me if you are looking at your females, are you going to be able to be that choosy? Are you going to be able to be so intense with your selection? Well, you could in theory, but usually you need to keep a lot more females because you need to maintain your population size. So you cannot really afford to keep only 10% of your females. So females, you can see, that's where your intensity will drop. You can still get rid of the worst ones you have, but you can see you're going to keep some which are, you know, below the average for that particular trait. So you cannot be that intense with females. You can be a lot more intense with the males. But that's one that you can control. Maybe you can, you know, instead of keeping 80% of your females, maybe you can keep 70%. Maybe you can put some pressure there. The accuracy of the genetic prediction. So this is a big one. And we can change this rate of genetic change quite a bit if we change the accuracy, okay? What is the accuracy? It's really how good of a job you did when you estimated your breeding values. So remember that estimated breeding value is just an estimation. It's really not a true genetic merit. It's just an estimation of the genetic merit. How close that estimation is to the true genetic merit, that's your accuracy, okay? If you have 100% accuracy, that means you got exactly the true genetic merit. We are really never there. Maybe in the dairy, if you have, you know, 30,000 progeny that you measure, maybe you get pretty close to 100%. But beef cattle, I would say, probably you're never there, okay? So, but that's the accuracy. We can still improve it, though, right? The more records I have, the more progeny I can generate and look at their phenotype, I get a better feel for how good that individual is, okay? So more records is going to lead to the higher accuracy. Generation interval. Well, you know that, right? How much time you have between two generations. Of course, you can change maybe this one a little bit. Maybe you can replace your... So what do you want here? If you want to make more change, how do you want the generation interval to be? Short. You want it shorter. So I can replace my population faster, which is going to give me more genetic change. If I'm replacing the population with something better, so if I did good in estimating genetic merit, oops, and I'm replacing the population faster, I should get there a little bit faster. So I can improve it through management or genomic selection, and we'll talk about that in a second. And then amount of genetic variation, how much variation I have in my population. This one is really the only one where you cannot really do much about. That's usually constant over a short period of times. So So one thing out of the four you cannot really control. The other three, there's always something you can do in terms of increasing your rate of genetic change. Okay, how do I achieve high accuracy? So I said that's one of the biggest one in terms of our ability to change it, to improve it, and we can do it, you know, either the traditional way or I can do it maybe through genomics. So historically, I said you get more records. The more records you have, the higher the accuracy is going to be. Also, if the heritability is higher, you usually have a higher accuracy. But that's not much you can do about because, you know, if you're interested in reproductive traits, they have low accuracy, which means it's going to be really difficult to achieve a high accuracy. Why is it that hard for a lowly heritable trait? Well, it's because if it's lowly heritable, that means, let's say, take reproduction, 20% heritability. Only 20% of what I see is due to genetics, okay? 80%, that's a lot, 80% is due to other environmental factors, okay? So that accuracy, because every time I look at that record, I see 80% environment, it's going to be really difficult for me to get a good estimate of that genetic merit. If you work with carcass traits, you are in a good situation, right? You've got highly heritable traits, you can get a high accuracy even if you have fewer number of records, okay? But this part you cannot change it, but this part you can work with. You can always get more numbers to help you out. But then again, you also need to keep in mind, sometimes I know I can say, sit here and say, get more records, but that means, you know, it takes a lot of time. You need to wait one more year, you need to wait two more years, you need to, you know, feed those animals, that's a lot of money that you put in there, especially for those traits we talked about, right, slower, difficult to improve. So yes, you can do it, but that's going to cost you a lot of money and it's going to take some time. That's why it's actually slow, because it takes some time to get that high level of accuracy. And so that's where genomics kind of came in. So we started with the DNA technology maybe around 1990s. And ever since we said, you know, if there's a way for me to look at the DNA and find the genes, and instead of looking at that winning weight, if I can look directly at the genes, I can estimate the genetic merit a lot better and a lot faster, okay? So we since figured that it's not as, you know, it sounds great in theory, but it's not that easy to do. And it's not easy, again, because you have thousands of genes, and they are all also interact with each other. It's not really easy to find them. We are still working on that. You know, we have traits on which we know a lot more about, but we have traits that we really don't know the genes they are controlled by. So, but it's not a new idea. So the challenges were, we found out I have thousands of genes. Each one has a very, very tiny effect. That's why it's hard to find them. That's why it's difficult to estimate the effect of those genes. The effect of each one is really very small. And so if I want to have a genetic test, I need to have a very large number of markers to explain most of the genetic variation, okay? We do have nowadays, we have markers, we have plenty of markers. The question is, I want to find those which are close to the genes, and I don't know what genes those are, okay? So that was one thing we found out. The other thing, which is actually very important for you, in Florida, we found, you know, the first ones to maybe capitalize on this, on the genomics, were the big breeds? Well, first of all, was the dairy, right? And we'll talk about those advantages. But then in the beef, you have the Angus, okay? Purebred operations, they were really the first ones to come up with some genetic tests. But what we found when we tried to use those tests in, you know, crossbred populations or anything other than purebred Angus, they don't work very well, okay? So now we think that, you know, we need to develop those tests in each specific breed if we want them to be very accurate. So if you have a Charolais and you're going to use a genetic test which was developed for Angus, it might work, but it's not going to work very well. You're going to put a lot of money into something that doesn't have a very high accuracy. And that's because what we found was a lot of those markers, they have a different phase in different populations. So I'm going to show you this in an example. Tenderness. So tenderness is one of those traits that I'm actually very interested in. So we started to look at tenderness a while ago, and then when I came here to Florida, that became even more important, because every time you go to maybe a bull syndicus influenced population, maybe tenderness is the first thing that comes to your mind. And how do we find the genes for tenderness? Now, there was a lot of research done, and we do have some genes which we know are impacting the tenderness. One of them is called the calpain. It's really an enzyme. What it does, it chews the muscle fibers, okay? So the more it chews the muscle fibers, the more tender the meat gets. So it's a gene that makes sense to be involved in tenderness. So we had a marker in that gene, in calpain, and if you know about the tenderness, this was one of the SNPs that was originally in the genetic test for tenderness. And it is what we call a SNP, a single nucleotide polymorphism. So the whole marker is just one nucleotide which is different in the DNA. So you can either have, you can see everything is the same up to this point, but then at this point, you either have a G or you have a C. Okay, so that's the only difference in this calpain gene for this particular marker. So the first research that came out on this one marker was, they said, if you have an animal which has two copies of the G, okay, that one is going to have tougher meat than an individual with only one copy of the gene. 1.1 kilograms, that's the force it takes to shear the steak. Kind of like the force it takes you to chew the steak. So the higher the number, the tougher the steak is, okay? But then some other research, they looked at exactly the same, and they said, yeah, there is some difference, but it's really not 1.1, it's a smaller effect than, which was about 0.36. But the biggest problem is when we looked at this, these were both really Angus-based populations. When we looked at anything that had some bull indicus in them, yes, we did find an effect, and it was a big one, but it was exactly the opposite. So in bull indicus, you have exactly the opposite allele, the C, is the one that's going to give you a tougher steak. So the problem with it is if I'm going to use this marker, and if I discover it in Angus, and they say, select for the C because the GG is tougher, if I do that in my population, which is bull syndicus, I'm selecting for exactly the opposite thing, okay? So that's what I meant, that a lot of those markers, if you look at other breeds, especially when you go from a bull stores to a bull syndicus, they could be exactly the opposite. It doesn't mean they are not working, it's just you really need to know what face you're looking at. So, and that's again, so in bull stores, the Gigi is the one which is tougher, but any boss indicus, the CC is tougher. So we can use it, but we need to know which is the version that I'm selecting for. So you need to have a little bit different. This is some data that came out of our population at UF. So you can definitely see a difference in those tenderness. So there's the Warner-Bressler shear force. So we do have that effect. But again, in our population, which is a Bos indicus, it's a multi-breed herd, but heavy Bos indicus, the CC is the one which is tougher. So we want to select for the GG, which are the more tender meat. So the point here being, we really need to get those, the genomics can help, but we really need to get it done in breed-specific populations, because they are not going to work that well across population. Not everything is going to be like this, but you know, if you have some really big genes which are flipped, you are not going to make that much progress. So we need to get them done in each breed. If we do it though, I think there are a number of potential benefits. So, and those are going to be greatest for the traits which are the most important to you, okay? The greatest benefits you're going to get are going to be for those difficult or expensive to measure traits. Just think about, can I have a genomic test where all I need to do is maybe genotype? Okay, I can do it early in the life of that individual. I don't need to maybe measure the trait. I can just get the DNA, pay for the test, and I know how that individual is going to perform for those difficult or expensive to measure traits. Traits which are measured late or after that, not currently selected for because we don't measure them routinely, or the traits that have low heritability. And remember, reproduction is one of them, okay? We can measure it if we want. It's just that, again, lowly heritable means I'm not going to have a very high accuracy on those traits. And the benefits that we'll get, if we can figure how to do it right, is I can get the value, the genetic merit, the minute an individual is born. I don't need to wait. I can get a blood sample or a hair sample, send it out, and I know the value of that individual the minute is born. That's going to increase the accuracy, okay? It will also reduce the generation interval, because again, I don't need to wait that long to replace my population. I can do it faster if I know how good those individuals are. And then I can also increase the selection intensity a little bit more. Okay, so I think we are going to, how about if we stop and take a 10, 5, 10,